Welcome, listeners, to this June 6th issue of Circulation on the Run. And I am Dr. Greg Hundley, Associate Editor, Director of the Pauley Heart Center at VCU Health in Richmond, Virginia.
And I'm Dr. Peter Meyeri from Akershus University Hospital and University of Oslo in Norway.
Well, Peter, a very interesting feature, and we're bringing in our good buddy Carolyn today to review that with two papers on one topic. Peter, this feature discussion involves Hutchinson-Gilford-Progeria syndrome, and it's an ultra-rare disease and causes premature aging. Today, before we get to that excellent feature discussion with Carolyn, how about we grab a cup of coffee and discuss some of the other articles in the issue?
Sounds great, Greg. You do want to start?
You bet. Thanks so much, Peter. So, as we know, there is some uncertainty surrounding the use of direct oral anticoagulants, or DOACs, in patients with kidney dysfunction. And so these authors, led by Dr. Chris Granger at Duke University, used the combined AF database. So that's data from RELY, Rocket AF, Aristotle, and Engage AF TIMI 48. To perform an individual patient-level network meta-analysis to evaluate the safety and efficacy of DOACs versus warfarin across continuous creatinine clearance measures. They compared standard-dose DOAC, lower-dose DOAC, and warfarin, and outcomes included stroke and systemic embolism, major bleeding, intracranial hemorrhage, and death.
Wow, that is a very important comparison and very practical for everyday cardiology practice. So what did they find?
Right, Peter. So among 71,683 patients with an average age of about 71 years, 37% women, with a mean follow-up of 23 months, and a mean creatinine clearance was 75 plus or minus 30 mLs per minute. They found the incidence of stroke and systemic embolism, major bleeding, intracranial hemorrhage, and death significantly increased with worsening kidney function, as we would probably expect. Now, they found that standard-dose DOACs were safer and more effective than warfarin down to a creatinine clearance of at least 25 mLs per minute. The lower-dose DOAC did not significantly lower the incidence of bleeding or intracranial hemorrhage compared to standard-dose DOAC, but the lower-dose DOAC was associated with a higher incidence of stroke or systemic embolism and death. And so, Peter, in summary, these findings support the use of standard-dose DOAC over warfarin in patients with renal dysfunction.
Wow, Greg, these findings are really provocative, and I would recommend everyone to pick up this paper and read it. Now, Greg, we are going to step into the world of preclinical science, and the next study is about atrial remodeling and arrhythmogenesis. Because genes uniquely expressed in the atria are known to be essential for maintaining atrial structure and function, and atrial tissue remodeling contributes to arrhythmia recurrence and maintenance. However, the mechanism underlying atrial remodeling remains poorly understood. And in this study, which comes to us from co-corresponding authors Song, Zhao, Song, and Hong, was designed to investigate whether other uncharacterized atrial-specific genes play important roles in atrial physiology and arrhythmogenesis.
Ah, very interesting, Peter. So what did they find here?
So, the authors used RNA sequencing analysis and identified calcium and integrin binding 2, abbreviated SIB2, as an atrial-enriched protein that is significantly downregulated in the left atria of atrial fibrillation patients and mouse models of AF. Using cardiomyocyte-specific knockout mice of this SIB2 and atrial myocyte-specific SIB2 overexpressive mouse models, they found that loss of SIB2 enhances AF occurrence, prolongs AF duration, and correlates with significant increase in atrial fibrosis under stress. So, the authors conclude that SIB2 represents a novel endogenous and atrial-enriched regulator that protects against atrial remodeling and AF under stress condition. Therefore, SIB2 may represent a new potential target for treating AF.
Oh, very nice, Petter. Wonderful study from the world of preclinical science. Well, how about we describe some of the other articles in the issue? And I'll go first. So Professor Hoffman has a very nice perspective piece entitled Time for Routine Helicobacter Pylori Screening in Coronary Artery Disease. And then that's followed by an ECG challenge from Professor Hochstadt entitled Occam's Razor, Two Arrhythmias in a Single Heart.
Oh, wow. That sounds like an interesting ECG challenge. And finally, Greg, we have some highlights from the literature by Tracy Hampton, where she this time summarizes three articles. And the first is published in Nature Communications about how e-cigarettes disrupt heart rhythm in mice depending on the ingredients. Second, a study published in Science Translational Medicine about how alcohol flushing gene variants increases coronary artery disease risk. And finally, an article published in Nature about how gut microbe-derived signals to the brain may contribute to a runner's high.
Excellent, Petter. Well, let's turn this over to our colleague, Carolyn, for our feature discussion involving Hutchinson-Gilford-Progeria syndrome and progerin.
Let's go.
We're in for such a treat in today's feature discussion. We're talking about a very rare yet super important syndrome, the progeria syndrome, and listening to a story of really some novel and critically, clinically important developments in this area. I'm so excited to have the first and corresponding author with us, Dr. Leslie Gordon, from Warren Elpert Medical School of Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island, as well as our own associate editor, Dr. Torbjørn Omland from Norway. Well, Leslie, I am just completely amazed at your personal story of how you became interested in progeria. Could you share that with our audience and also please tell us a little bit about the condition?
Thank you so much. Thanks, Carolyn, for inviting me to your podcast. It's fantastic to be here. And thank you for publishing this really important study for the field of progeria and maybe even aging. Yes, my son Sam was diagnosed with progeria when he was about 2 years old. That was back in 1998. And it inspired us to create the Progeria Research Foundation. Progeria is an ultra-rare childhood premature aging disease. It causes many symptoms, lifelong failure to thrive, total alopecia, there are bone and skin and joint problems, but most importantly, it causes a rapid childhood atherosclerosis, cardiovascular disease, that is similar to what people get in their 60s and 70s, but instead in early childhood, it begins in children with progeria and leads to their death on average in their mid-teens. It's ultra rare. There are only 16 children with progeria in the US today, and it's estimated there are 400 children worldwide. And when Sam was diagnosed, as with most rare diseases back then, basically nothing was known. We didn't really even know if it was a genetic disease. There was no treatment. There was no research. There was really no hope. So we started the Progeria Research Foundation, whose mission is to find the cause, treatment, and cure for children with progeria, and also understand how it connects in with generalized aging. So after we found the causal mutation in the gene, which encodes the nuclear membrane protein called lamin A, we did that in 2003, thanks to a wonderful collaboration with Francis Collins, who was the NIH director. We were able to identify the resulting abnormal lamin A protein that causes the disease, and we named it progerin. So this study was inspired by a tremendous need for a high-quality biomarker that can tell us quickly and effectively whether an experimental therapy used in clinical trials for children with progeria is working or not working. So by measuring progerin, we hope to arrive at new treatments as quickly as possible. And also, we want to reject medicines that are ineffective as quickly as possible, too, because as you are aware, all medicines cause side effects, and we don't want children with progeria to be exposed to those side effects for any more time than is necessary.
Oh, wow, Leslie, thank you so much for that heartfelt sharing. I've done this podcast for a number of years and can tell you yours is one of the most remarkable stories that have ever been shared on this podcast. Could you now share a little bit more about the scientific process of how did you develop this immunoassay and validate it?
Thank you for asking. Yes, we actually first had to develop a progerin assay. It's very important that this be quantitative and highly sensitive. So we wanted to make sure that we could detect progerin in a biological sample that's easy to obtain from the children longitudinally. Because they're small and they're frail and they're coming in for clinical trials periodically, and we had to be able to really get samples from the children that wouldn't be too stressful for them. And so we chose blood plasma to achieve this goal after testing a few different substances. And we were able to develop an immunoassay using an EMD millipore system that's sensitive enough so that it needs only a small amount of blood to run. Mm-hmm. So we've been running a series of clinical trials in search of treatments at Boston Children's Hospital, a wonderful expert team there, since 2007. We fly the children in from all over the world, and every time they come for a trial visit, we bank research blood samples into the Progeria Research Foundation Cell and Tissue Bank. And we obviously were hoping to use it for those samples for pivotal research and developing bioassays, and here we are. So once we had the assay built, we then set about asking if plasma progerin is higher in progeria, if it correlates with patient survival, and if lonafarnib, our only approved medicine for the children, lowers progerin levels.
That's great. Beautifully explained. And in summary, what did you find?
Okay. So we looked at over 70 children with progeria at baseline prior to drug therapy and on therapy over time when the children came in for the trials. And we also looked at assessed blood from children and adults without progeria because we suspected there might be some progerin in the blood in the general population. Because we know that the rest of us do make progerin, but at a much lower rate than the children with the disease. We first showed that plasma progerin is much higher in children with progeria than in the non-progeria children and adults, about 95-fold higher. But the rest of us, in fact, do have progerin in our blood. In this rate, 95-fold higher, this agrees with what we've actually found in the arterial walls of children with progeria versus adults in the past using tissue-based assays. We found that the drug treatment decreased progerin levels on average in the children by almost 40%, 38%, and the levels stayed low the entire time the children were treated for up to 10 years on the lonafarnib therapy. In the children with progeria, we found that higher levels correlated with increased risk of death, and that the lower their progerin levels were and the longer the levels stayed low, the better their survival advantage. So for example, the lifespan for the 13 patients of that 70 who were receiving the therapy for over 10 years was estimated to increase by almost 5 years, which is pretty big deal. It's a 35% increase in lifespan since the children on average would live to about 14 and a half. This gives them an average age of passing away of almost 20 years of age. So it's a profound change. Of course, it's never enough. We want these kids to live into their 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s, but I think it's a big step forward for us.
Oh, thank you and congratulations once again, Leslie. Torbjørn, could you tell us what was your first impression when you saw this paper as our editor?
You know, I, as a circulation associate editor, I read a lot of biomarker papers, and, you know, it's a very competitive field. So the bar for actually considering a biomarker paper for publication and circulation is very high. But in this paper sort of caught my attention right away, and there were several reasons for that. I think it was a very interesting and well-written paper. It's about a very rare and serious disease that I think most of us, you know, we have seen pictures, we have some kind of relationship, but we don't know these patients personally. And then, you know, the quality of the paper was striking because they reported a completely new assay that seemed to have very good, you know, analytical specifics, very high sensitivity, also very specific. And not only that, it also seemed to measure the pathogenic protein in the disease, which is not always the case with biomarker papers. And furthermore, the biomarker was modifiable by the Lonafarnib, which is, as Leslie pointed out, the only FDA-approved drug for this disease. And finally, it was closely related to the outcome of the patients. So I think it was a very complete paper, very interesting. And as I said, it sort of directly reflected the pathogenic process.
Thank you so much, Torbjørn. I do have a question, Leslie. I mean, you know, you started off by telling us progeria is accelerated aging in many ways. So do you think that what you found is applicable to generalized aging and the general process of atherosclerosis?
Yeah, that is just a fantastic question. We do see progerin in the blood vessels in the arteries of folks that are getting older and older. In other words, we did a study several years ago, not with this assay, but with an immunofluorescence, looking at progerin in the blood vessel walls. And the older we get about 3% per year buildup of progerin in those tissues in the artery walls. So this begs the question, what's it doing there? We know it's toxic. And does it have something to do with aging in all of us? Could it be one of those markers, one of those processes that goes on that we just sort of attribute to, well, there's genetic predisposition? I think we can use this assay to ask important questions like that because it's so quantitative.
I'm just really, really, truly amazed, Leslie, by what you've accomplished here and the potential implications of this far beyond even this rare syndrome. Torbjørn, what do you think would be sensible next steps from this? And then maybe we'll give Leslie the last word of what are her planned next steps.
No, I think these observations are very interesting because we actually also requested that Leslie should measure it in, you know, other diseases and in control subjects. And there were very low levels, but still detectable. So I think combined with Leslie's previous observations, that this really begs for investigations in other cohorts to look for development of atherosclerosis and premature aging.
Thank you. Leslie?
Yeah, oh gosh, there are so many things we want to do with the assay, so many things that we think are really important. Looking at aging is certainly one of them. We want to use the assay to understand the role of progerin in aging and heart disease, since we now have an assay that's sensitive enough to ask important questions about how progerin might be damaging to arteries or the heart, for example, as we all age. There are other things as well we want to do with the assay. We're getting ready to meet actually with the FDA about the progerin assay. So publishing this paper was super important. Again, thank you so much. It's an honor to have it in circulation. The FDA will look at our data and decide whether this assay is acceptable as a measure of treatment effect within our clinical trials. And that determines if we can use it for a rare disease, the rare disease accelerated drug approval that we always hope to get if we have an effective drug in the future. So this might be a game changer for children with progeria because we want to be able to use the assay to evaluate therapies now and in the future, maybe for small molecules, but also for things like RNA therapeutics and even gene editing therapies. So it's super important for the trials, a pivotal moment for us, I think. Also, we are now looking at progerin levels in the animal models of progeria. Our amazing basic science colleagues have sent us blood samples from the various animal models that have been created. Some of them express progerin in the entire body, and some are more selective, expressing it in blood vessels, maybe endothelial cells, or just the vascular media, for example. And we want to be able to use the assay to understand preclinically what these drugs might be doing before we jump to the clinic.
Oh, wow. Leslie, I think we could go on discussing this at length, but we're so, so grateful once again that you published this very, very important game-changing work in Circulation, that you're here on the podcast, even sharing the far-reaching implications of all of it. The audience thanks you, I'm sure, as do I.
Thank you.
Thank you, audience, for listening to Circulation on the Run. Don't forget to tune in again next week.
This program is copyright of the American Heart Association 2023. The opinions expressed by speakers in this podcast are their own and not necessarily those of the editors or of the American Heart Association. For more, please visit ajjournals.org.